The tank is now open, which means it's time for another edition of the Shark Tank Recap here on Reality TV Wrap Ups. Hello, everyone. Mike Bloom here, back again to talk about another episode of Shark Tank Season 7. But I'm not alone. I am joined, as always, by Jasmine Sidhu. Jasmine, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing pretty well. Well, I know I represent a multitude of personalities, and we're all checking in with each other. We're doing great. We're here to talk about another interesting episode of Shark Tank. No pets involved, as the past two episodes we covered have been, but we get some kids in a myriad of different ways, both presenting and products for. And we also get the introduction, at least on this podcast, of Barbara Corcoran as a shark.
I know. Well, as I've mentioned in previous episodes, Barbara is my favorite shark. So I was super excited to see that she was back on the panel after 2 weeks of doing a recap since she wasn't there. So I'm pretty excited.
Yeah. So would you say overall, and obviously we'll take a deeper dive into each of these pitches, but did you say this is a perfect representation about what you love about Barbara overall from her performance this episode?
Honestly, I would have to say yes. Like, we're going to see Barbara tell it like it is and like give some harsh truths to some of the investors or people seeking investments. But she also shows her softer side with a very surprise investment that she makes that we'll definitely talk about.
Definitely. So Barbara is taking the place of Damon. Damon is gone for the second week in a row, but Kutcher is out and Barbara is in. So our layout from left to right is Mark, Barbara, Kevin holding down the middle, Lori, and then Robert. So it's a pretty good, I'd call this, like, I know Damon was there kind of since the beginning, but I would call this like probably my favorite iteration of a
Shark Tank. Are you saying Damon is his name should be Last Resort Damon?
I was advocating for that from the beginning. You were the one that was backing Robert.
All right. I mean, I have to say, like, I didn't really miss Damon tonight, so maybe that's saying something.
Yeah, it's because it's every pitch he'd be like, it's not for me. I'm out. And granted, this is going to end with 75% of the deals not going down this episode in a variety of ways. But still, I think Damon was, I personally did not miss him, though. Hopefully there are not many Damon John fans that are now going to be sending me hate tweets.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, because we've never really spoken or broken down their intro packages and how hilarious their fake business meetings are at the top of the episode. Have you ever noticed that?
A little bit. I mean, Mark Cuban has the weird one that like cuts randomly to him posing with a trophy.
Right.
That might be the weirdest one. I mean, you also have Robert driving his hot rod down the road. Lori on her boat, Barbara just like walking down the New York City skyline. And then Kevin looks to be like the most at home, right. I guess. But even then, like it's
for all of them except Mark, they're like having these like fake negotiations where they seem overly satisfied with themselves. And it always makes me smile when I see them.
Definitely. I mean, speaking of overly saturated intro packages, I feel like we can jump right into our first pitch here, which is the drip drop. And of course, when you have two 14-year-olds on Shark Tank, you have to give them as much airtime as possible. And so we start here with a prepackaged tape about the two of them. And man, we go back again to these very scripted scenes. They have the two of them sitting at a laptop and they're like, what do you think about that idea? Great. Pound it. And I'm like, oh man, I mean, it's two 14-year-old boys, so it's going to be awkward.
Yeah,
but
I don't
like
mind
this is a whole new level of awkward
kids, you know. As I didn't mind it as much as the one from last week with what was that one, the no phone?
Yeah, the no phone was 2 weeks ago when they were just literally just sitting in a boardroom saying like, hey, how about this idea? I don't know why these producers feel like they need to go for like the historical reenactments a la True TV of how this product happened. I would say before we really dive into the drip drop, what are your thoughts overall? Because I mean, I think there have been a couple times when children have come on and certainly helped pitch, but I believe this is the first time that two underage people have come and done their own pitch without adult supervision.
No, not at all.
Oh, really?
There have been plenty of kids on the show. I'm trying to think of, there's definitely been one off the top of my head who's been there without parental supervision or supervision. He was a 15-year-old who was like selling some sort of water bottle that can like secrete orange juice or something like that. I'm like explaining it.
That sounds disgusting.
I mean, there's definitely been children on the show who've come with their parents. Sometimes like it's interesting. Like this could be like a good, another side topic we can discuss. There are some kids who come in with their parents and it's very obvious that their parents are the ones driving the thing and they're kind of using their kid as sort of the cute factor. And then,
so you would say that their parent is running and their kid is being pulled behind them on some sort of cycle vehicle.
Maybe, yes. but there have been other instances where, you know, the parent is on stage with them. The one that I'm kind of thinking of but the parent is on stage with them, but they're not actually just involved as much. And the one that I'm thinking of is there was some sort of like back massager that was done by one girl. I think she was about 10 or 11 years old, and she later got featured on Beyond the Tank. So she seemed very much in control of that product, and her mom was just kind of assisting her. So there have been plenty of children and teenagers on the show. And in fact, there was a themed episode, I want to say last year, where they just featured pitches from teenagers and kids. So this is not the first time that they've done them. In terms of how I feel overall about these sort of baby entrepreneurs that come onto the show, I have very mixed feelings. Like, part of me is like, I don't know, I have this weird thing about kids being involved in entertainment. Like, I used to work in entertainment production, and just like, you know, there's a part of me that's just like, let kids be kids. On the other hand, you know, some of these, you know, inventions that they come up with could be good, you know, experiences for them to start their own businesses one day. It's the ones that kind of come in and they like, this is the company that I'm going to be running for the rest of my life. And they're only 13, 14 years old. And I'm like, oh, I don't know how comfortable I feel about that. But, you know, when I was 14, I never had the confidence to be able to like show up in front of a broadcast television audience and speak to millionaires and billionaires. So good for these kids for having that confidence.
Definitely. It might also speak to the larger microcosm of reality TV in general, or specifically American reality TV, because I'm thinking about like when they have kids audition for America's Got Talent, for example, and they tend to get treated with a little bit more of a softer hand from the judges than some of the older contestants might. I mean, I'll definitely give them to the sharks this episode that, and I haven't seen too many episodes with kids in the past, which is probably why I asked that question to you in the first place. But at least, you know, these people were pretty firm with them, which is good. Maybe it's because these two did seem to have kind of a head on their shoulders. I mean, they did have a patent, which I'm sure we'll talk about, which is definitely different from the, you know, 12-year-old kid coming in saying, hey, I want a water bottle that also pumps out orange juice at the same time. So, I mean, maybe because they were so advanced down the line in terms of their business plan, maybe they decided to treat them with more of an iron fist. But yeah, I mean, I wonder, looking at the initial incarnation of Dragon's Den as well, how much kids are brought into it, because I do think there is a certain marketability when it comes to bringing kids in, but does that sort of compromise the overall quality of the show?
Yeah, and I remember reading probably around last year, it was an interview with Mark Burnett, but it was an interview with some producer on Shark Tank. And, you know, one of the reasons why this show is thriving in its so-called dead time spot, like, you know, Friday nights are supposed to be like, you know, where TV shows go to die, but Shark Tank's been doing extremely well. And one of the factors that he pointed out to was that families, you know, they're not out clubbing or at bars on a Friday night. They're sitting at home, and a lot of them are watching Shark Tank. So a lot of, you know, parents are watching this show with their kids and using this, you know, TV show as a tool to talk to them about money and finances and starting a business. You know, we're in this era where, you know, the way to make money now is to be the next Mark Zuckerberg, to start your own startup. So I think like the show recognizes that a lot. And, you know, they want to have kid investors whenever they can get them, you know, whenever they can, because they can, you know, appeal to that demographic.
What do you think the chances are then that one day they do like a Shark Tank Junior, almost like a MasterChef Junior? I mean, at one point, I think they were trying to do like a Top Chef Junior, though that never went through. But I could absolutely see it.
You know what? I can 100% see it. I don't know how I feel about that, though. I like it when it's just in small doses, like, you know, Ashton Kutcher coming in, just small doses every now and then. I don't know if I can stomach a full TV show with children entrepreneurs.
let's put them and Kutcher off to pasture, where he'll host it. He'll be the shark, and it'll be just kids presenting to him. That way, it'll be a completely segregated thing. Jeff Foxworthy can be there over there too, just so we can say like, oh yeah, that thing exists. And the Shark Tank franchise will slowly but surely take over ABC along with The Bachelor and Dancing with the Stars.
Right. Now, would the investors be the same in Shark Tank Junior? Would they get like even younger investors who are like, they're 22 and they're jaded now, and they're giving investment advice to 10-year-olds.
Exactly. It's going to be like, listen, I went to college. I know a little bit more about this business than you do.
Right.
So let's get into the Drip Drop here. So the Drip Drop is the creation of Oliver Greenwald and Sam Nassif. They're from Denver. And essentially what this is a ring that goes around the ice cream cone to catch any sort of dripping on a hot summer day, and it's perfect timing considering that summer is right around the corner. But the thing about this is that, as they say, it's very environmentally friendly in that it is made out of the same substance as a waffle cone, so it essentially is an edible disposal or I wouldn't say disposal, but almost an edible object that helps prevent mess. Now, I feel like this is a very universal product in comparison to the other ones that we've talked about, considering that everyone loves ice cream in some way, shape, or form. Jasmine, did the drip drop hit you personally?
I was going to say, like, does everyone love ice cream?
I don't know.
I like ice cream. Do I love it? I don't know.
Well, I would say, even if you like ice cream, do you find having ice cream drip on your hand is such an inconvenience that you would want this product?
Well, here's the thing. So I do like ice cream, but I always get ice cream in bowls because I actually hate that dripping problem. Like, I don't like, you know, having that all over my hand. So I usually get, like, you know, in Baskin Robbins, I get it in the little cups. So that's kind of how I deal with that problem. So when I saw this product, I'm like, it's cute. I definitely can see a need for this. Is it that big of a need that I really need to, like, have this around my cone? I don't think so. I think, you know, there are some people like myself that eat ice cream in little bowls to avoid, you know, the drip problem. I don't think the drip problem is actually so dire that people are like, oh, I got to get a little ring around my cone. I think, you know, the licking the sides of it, it's kind of part of the experience. So at first I'm like, it's cute. There is a need. Is there enough need that I think this can be a viable product? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely coming from it from a kid angle, right? They bring up to the sharks immediately like, hey, you know, you're going to be marketing to kids directly. So it's almost like a by kids for kids type of thing. And that only goes so far. I mean, I don't know. And again, I might be completely underestimating the adult populace. I don't know how many adults would adamantly want to pursue these products on their own. This definitely sees something that seems like something that's more marketed towards people with kids. I'm also in the same boat with you in terms of cup over cone. For me, it's because I'm not a big fan of hard ice cream. I like soft serve just because I guess I have a sensitivity in my teeth to really like biting down on ice cream. And I know that the only ice cream that's really served on a lot of cones in most ice cream shops are hard ice cream. So I usually go for the cup either way. So I agree that it doesn't necessarily appeal to me too much. Something that's also a big sticking point for me is that, again, this is my perspective, but I definitely agree with Barbara here. The rings themselves, these prototypes do not look good, in my opinion. They're like jagged on the sides. Even the ones that like they have presented don't look great. They look like something you would make for like a bake sale, which again, you can understand these are 14-year-olds in their mom's kitchen baking them. But the fact is, if you want to roll out things that look professional enough to distribute to a variety of ice cream stores, you got to step up your game a little bit.
Right. So they do mention that this is a prototype, isn't it? Like they started with a 3D model, which they made into a silicone model, which I thought was pretty impressive. And I noticed Mark's facial reactions. He was pretty impressed by that as well. So just to quickly recap, so they are asking for $50,000 for 20% of their company. Like even using the word company to describe what they're doing, it's kind of laughable. I mean, like, it's cute, but like, you know, I approach it as I would any sort of investment opportunity. I hope, you know, the majority of the sharks see it that way. And I'm like, I'm not into funding science projects. And this was literally a science project for them. I think they mentioned like they did it at some science fair, like the Gates Invention Competition. I just don't see this being any sort of viable product and company. Like, I think it's cute. You know, they're going to boost their resume that they're on Shark Tank and like get into some prestigious college, I'm sure, where, you know, they'll eventually start their real company. But you know, if I'm going to be investing $50,000, I want something that can be a company now. And I think one of the sharks actually gave them that advice to like, you know, work on this after you finish high school, if that's something you want to do. I think it was Kevin that still said, because he was like, you know, people will still be eating ice cream in 100 years and you have a patent on this. This is not going away. So finish high school and then you can work full time on it. And then maybe I can get on board. So that was
Kevin. Kevin quite literally told them stay in school, basically.
Yeah. He was being like old man, Kevin, stay in school. But yeah, no, Barbara did bring up that point that it wasn't aesthetically appealing. She also brought up a really relevant point that her cone was still dripping through the prototype. So she was pointing out a lot of problems with the product right off the bat.
Yeah, and the thing about this ring as well is that, I mean, ice cream cones are also not one size fits all. I know there are some that have the flat bottom, some are actually like the cones, some are waffle cones, which definitely have more of an amorphous shape. So I know the big argument that kind of broke out between the sharks in the middle of this was sort of a disagreement between Robert and Mark, where Robert said, or I think Mark was the one that said, hey, you should basically offer some of these to stores for free, almost like a drug dealer, where stores can utilize them and get the word out because they're going to know who to distribute it to. Well, as Robert said, okay, no, you need to work on the licensing. You need to make sure that you have that nailed down. So it was an interesting dichotomy. In the end, neither one of them go for it, but I thought it was interesting for them to kind of plot out. And one of the things I always love about this show is how, even though they're all from this big world of business and entrepreneurship, that they each predict such different paths for these people.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So that was the big argument. Mark was like, you got to, you know, go into the stores and show them how to use it and learn it. And Robert was like, you got to go to the manufacturers. And I think Barbara was also the one who didn't think it was a licensing deal. You got to like go into the ice cream store and sell it yourself. And, you know, I kind of have to agree. Like, I don't like their whole kid factor has to come into play into a little bit of this. And I think they have to do a little bit of the groundwork themselves. And, you know, another thing that they were talking about, and Lori brought it up, was, you know, you don't need us. They were talking about how, you know, they wanted a shark on their side to open up doors for them. And they're like, well, you got into Shark Tank and you have the confidence to speak to us. Like, you can get on the phone. And if, you know, getting a licensing play and talking to manufacturers is what you really want to do, you don't need us. So it did sound like the trajectory was going towards them not getting a deal. But then they gave this like super saccharine pitch to Barbara, which was, Barbara, show to the rest of America, dreams really do come true.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, I guess now I can say I erroneously said that Lori was the warm-blooded shark, even though Lori definitely, I mean, I don't think you would see Kevin O'Leary saying, hey, I don't want your money, which is essentially what Lori did, which said, like, I would feel bad taking your money when you could just as easily do this yourself. But yeah, Barbara, you know, got the play to her conscience a little bit. And even though she says, you know, I think the rings look ugly and they don't taste good, she still offers $50,000 for a third of the company.
And here's why I think she did. I don't think it was a pure, like, I feel sorry for these kids. We talked about a little bit last week in terms of Barbara's Hall of Fame. She does have a lot of food products in her portfolio coming out of Shark Tank. So I think she sees, already has experience in terms of what she can do with this product. Based on the company she's previously worked with on Shark Tank. So there's one thing. And the second thing is, she has suggested different design fixes for products. It's something that she always keeps an eye on, if you know Barbara's history on the show. So I think she has a vision for this company. It's not necessarily a pity offer, which is why she upped the equity so she could be a third partner. So I'm really curious to see what could come of this now that Barbara's involved. So obviously, to recap, Barbara does make a deal with $50,000 for 33.3% of the company, contingent on the fact that they fix the design of the product.
Which we'll see. Again, I'm looking at, I thought I'd take the liberty of, as we move forward here, taking a look at the websites of each of these products as we talk about it. The Drip Drop has not come out yet. Maybe the guy behind the Kid Runner got behind it and decided to delay release of it. But yeah, they're promoting the heck out of their Shark Tank appearance, but they haven't actually released anything yet. Maybe it's because they took Kevin's advice and said, okay, let's wait until we finish high school and then really hit the ground running. But yeah, I feel like once they actually do decide to get things in motion, I think Barbara could really help. I totally agree with what you're saying about her being a supporter of these fledgling food-specific startups. And comparing it to other ones, I mean, you know, I'm thinking about like Nuts and More, which was recently featured on Beyond the Tank a couple weeks ago. And it seemed like they had much more of a focus and much more of a profitability in terms of, I think they were, from what I remember, they were going for like healthy spreads almost, whereas here it's more so like, hey, this is so your kids' fingers won't get sticky, in which case they still might because there's still some design flaws, as Barbara pointed out. So I think it's much more of a narrow margin of marketability, but at the same time, they still got a deal, which is awesome, especially being 14 years old.
Right. So, you know, obviously good for them, but I am not 100% convinced that this is going to go anywhere. So that, like I said, I'm curious to see where this goes, but I'm not fully confident.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to get a check-in in like season 10, maybe. Once 4 years have passed and these kids are out of college, maybe they'll actually do something.
Right. So following from this pitch, we get, I guess, a regular Shark Tank recap going back to a previous product that Shark Tank has featured to see where that company is today. So we go and check in with Game Day Couture. I believe they were on last season or earlier in the season.
Yeah, last season.
And a husband-wife couple made a deal with Mark Cuban. And I guess it's like female sportswear, I guess, is how you would describe
it. Yeah, so I guess what it's licensed as is, you know, at sports games, or so I'm told, you have a lot of merchandise for the teams, specifically for men's clothing. And basically, I think it's specifically designed for women, but it's still with like the team's logo and marketing, which, again, I'm not a big sports person, so I don't understand why why the sports merchandising companies wouldn't have that in the first place. But I guess in focusing specifically on it, it's probably more of a profitable market than I once thought. I mean, this is like compared to the past two, which were very much in bulk updates at these, you know, at Lori and Barbara's, the trade show and the gathering in Cabo St. Lucas, respectively. This was very short, in my opinion. It was just, hey, we're sitting down with Mark. Mark says, hey, you increased your sales a lot. We're going to aim for $25 million this year. I'm going to basically, you know, pass the word on to a bunch of other teams. And that was it.
Right. I mean, like, I actually made the note. I'm like, they looks like they filmed this in just 5 minutes. They're like, show up to Mark's office and pretend to have this meeting and cut. That's yeah. How it was.
I wonder if it's in their contract that, like, you agree to stopping by at some point within like a year after you're on Shark Tank to just do a quick catch up and then you can go on your merry way. Because I also don't know, like, you know, are these people based in the same area as Mark? Did they have to fly them out there to meet with him?
Right. And can we just say, like, how lucky are these people? Like, they came up with this idea and they got an owner of a sports franchise to back them. Like, there was no way they weren't going to be successful with this product and with Mark Cuban and specifically what he does in the sports world.
Yeah, I haven't seen their pitch, but I had a feeling that if they didn't get him, that would have been an instant failure. You know, on The Voice, there are some people that go on and say, I want to specifically get on this person's team. I'm sure they went in with the exact same idea.
Right. So let's go into the second pitch of the night. Do you want to introduce it?
Jared and Raja Productions. They have appeared in front of us in a magical glissando, if you will. Fun fact, actually, I learned Jared and Raja, who are a magician and musician, respectively, they competed on America's Got Talent Season 7.
Oh, wow.
A couple of years ago, where they did their usual thing, their magic and music, no miracles as of yet. but they made it pretty far. They were eliminated in like the semifinals, and then they came back as a wild card and got eliminated there. But they still made a pretty big dent. But they are Jarrett Parker and Raja Raman. They are a music magic company, and they are one of these types which we get from time to time, Jasmeet, where entertainers will come in specifically saying, help fund our show. And this one is specifically a show on the Sunset, or on the Las Vegas Strip.
Mm-hmm. And so they're asking for $750,000 for 40% to help produce this magical spectacle in Las Vegas. And can I just say off the top, I hate these kind of pitches. I don't want to invest in someone's show. End of story.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And as someone who came from, I mean, you're from the entertainment world. I used to come from a performing arts background. I can understand that, like, even Robert, I think, points this out later that, like, it's a very, very risky field. Only a small percentage of companies and ventures and shows actually succeed. I can understand that you want to diversify the pot up a little bit in terms of products that come in. But I feel like these entertainers never do well on this show.
Have you seen any sort of shows in Las Vegas? At all.
I've never been to Las
Vegas.
Oh,
you've never been? Okay, so I've been to Las Vegas. I've never seen a show, though, because maybe that's just my own personal feeling, but, like, I want to go there. Like, I don't want to spend $100 to see, you know, some random magic show, though I guess their general mission for what they predicted was around $60. But I just imagine that market is so saturated in Las Vegas. Like, you've got, like, dance shows, you got magic shows, you got musical shows, you got, like, general Vegas around you, which is, like, gambling and the partying, and it's just, like, there's nothing special about
this. I mean, I don't know. Again, I know little to nothing about the Las Vegas scene, but there's a few things in that. A, they already bring up how there are 10 other magic shows going on. I can understand that magic is a wide berth of tricks and illusions and et cetera. But I feel like there is a little bit of a saturation there. I mean, it's not like you're going to say, this one is specifically dealing in this type of magic. I want to see it. Second of all, I feel like a lot of the magicians or acts that are there are pretty well known around the country. Even with the Shark Tank bump, I feel like if these guys made it, they'd have to do a lot of legwork to get people in there. Just because aside from, you know, people that are really big devotees of America's Got Talent, they're going to be relatively unknown out there, which is very, very risky to invest in.
Right. Should we talk a little bit about their actual magic trick that they showed at the top of the
Yeah, I guess so. I was impressed. I was impressed. Well, I was initially turned off at first because it starts off with Jarrett showing six colored handkerchiefs to Lori. So you think, okay, Lori's going to pick a color, but then he asks her to pick a number and then counts it, which I was so confused about. And maybe that's like one of the magician's secrets, is that he manipulates the count no matter what the number is, so he gets a certain handkerchief. But that started off on a weird note for me. I know Raja is the pianist, but I could barely hear him at all. I'm not sure if it was just the background music that the producers put in, but I didn't understand the musical element at all. But I was pretty impressed. They put their assistant in a cage. They tied Lori's ribbon around her hands, so we know it's her, that they're not using doubles. They basically burn her cage down and she appears in this water piano. Actually, maybe the reason why we didn't hear Raja is because his piano was filled with water. I'm sure that is not good acoustically speaking. Right.
It was definitely impressive. I mean, I can't get excited about this. And, you know, especially since this magic trick was filmed on TV, I'm like, it's so easy for them to just do a cutaway shot and like there was some other patching up that they did. Like, it's hard to believe in these things when you can't see it live. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
You think about the magic of television and what they might be doing there. But I'm sure, you know, the trick worked in person. But like I said, there's just so much risk with entertainment productions. Some of the sharks have talked about, like, I think Mark said he, you know, produced movies once upon a time. And you can make a great product, but sometimes you can't predict if people are going to see the product, I mean. And that's the biggest risk for me. And, you know, Robert even says on top of that, and we talked a little bit about it, that he would feel more comfortable if, you know, they had a huge following or they were a well-known brand. They've got really nothing going for them. Like, they could be the best magicians in the world, but we know that when it comes to performance and art, that's not necessarily the most predictive factor for success. You know, the most amazing singers in the world aren't the ones topping, you know, the Billboard charts. And it's just something you can't predict. So it would be too risky of an investment for me.
No, they'd have to be rather infamous, in my opinion, in order to really garner any sort of reputation, in order to really hunker down, what, a 1600 seat theater, even doing one show a day. I mean, I do like how I don't think Kevin knows entirely about the entertainment industry when he says, oh yeah, why don't you do two shows a day? But Mark very quickly points out, like, yeah, you're going to dilute ticket sales almost immediately if you're doing two shows a day. I thought it was interesting. I didn't realize that in Las Vegas, now it's a new policy that essentially the casinos will rent the venue to the performers rather than actually hiring them to come on, and basically said, like, hey, we'll give you the space if you make the money to fill it.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I guess Vegas is getting smart.
Very, very true. I guess Vegas is gaining a mind about it.
Right. And Lori's actually the one that said, like, you shouldn't be in Vegas. You should go to Chicago because, you know, apparently there are no magicians in Chicago. So maybe they'll take that route.
Definitely not, because there's so much wind that it just blows all the cards out of the deck.
Right. So they end up with no deal, which was kind of obvious. Yeah, I don't have high hopes for them.
Definitely not. And I'm looking at their website. They have a lot of appearances, but it doesn't really look like they're moving on to anything big, which, again, makes sense. They've also, like, I talked about their appearances on America's Got Talent before. I mean, they were on Masters of Illusions. They were on Late Night with Stephen Colbert. So they're clearly doing the network circuit here, and it seemed like Shark Tank was just a stop.
Right. And since you mentioned they were on America's Next Top Talent, Got Talent.
I mean, America's Next Top Model. They floundered in America's Next Top Model.
Since you mentioned they were on that TV show, like, it kind of just triggered in my mind, like, are they just trying to just get TV coverage?
And oh, absolutely.
So.
Yeah, I mean, it's what, like I said before, you want to, especially in this day and age, you need to become viral, especially when you're going out to a market that's very saturated. And I'm sure they said, like, okay, let's just get our face out there as much as possible. So at least if someone might remember us from flipping around the channels on Friday night, they might be able to want to pay however much money to see us.
Right. I mean, there's a great joke in here about a disappearing act and how they didn't get an investment deal, but I'm too tired to think of it. So let's go on to the next pitch.
Do you need a handkerchief?
A handkerchief, yes.
All right, let's talk about Kid Runner. So interesting entrance here. It's founder Will Warren with champion runner Max King holding this girl Sophie in said Kid Runner. And I'll admit, I mean, if I'm an investor and I see a kid wearing a helmet while operating this thing, I'm not entirely sure the safety standards are up to mark.
I mean, I've seen a ton of, like, you know, kid situations with bikes, and I've seen those little pram stroller things as people are running. I'm like, the kids have helmets, so that wasn't anything that was immediately of a warning to me. I did love Robert running with the kid. It's just like, this is why you gotta love Robert. It's just like him running around and the kid is just bouncing up and down behind him.
I'm pretty sure I could say, like, hey, here's some here's some dog do that tastes like taffy. And Robbie'd be like, okay, I'll try it. Like, this guy seems like he's up for anything.
Right. I love that Barbara was like, she looks like she's stomach sick. Like, how awful would it have been if the kid just, like, vomited right there during the pitch?
I actually thought at one point, like, you talk about magical cuts beforehand. I'm sure there might have been a shot where, like, the kid, like, ran away or, like, got really sick and had to sit down, and they just decided to cut around it to not make them seem too much like a goofball. Though he does, I don't want to say he comes off like a goofball here as much as he kind of comes off a little stubborn.
Right. So I don't know if you actually describe what this is. It's device that you, I guess, a running parent will strap around their waist or chest area. And the kid is kind of like in this vehicle behind them. And it's supposed to be optimized that the parent can feel light while running and the kid is safe in the back. And yeah, I, as you can tell by my voice, I'm like, I don't know about this product. But, you know, he's coming in asking for an investment deal of $500,000 for 20%. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I used to live in Park Slope, Brooklyn. If anyone knows anything about New York, it's filled with a lot of parents and young kids. And I've definitely seen parents, you know, with that device, with the trolley. What do you call it? A trolley or pram? A carriage?
Tram.
Yeah, in front of them. And so I see that there are parents who run with their kids. That's just still a very hard concept for me to think about. It's like, either, like, in my mind, I just can't see, like, what parent is so healthy and together with their life that they're able to, like, not only be able to jog, but, like, take their kid jogging with them. So that was kind of like my little cognitive issue with this.
I completely agree. And look, I come from a completely unathletic perspective, so this is purely objective from my point of view. But I mean, Will gives us perspective about, like, you know, you feel emotionally ecstatic when you finish that race and you want that kid right beside you. And I'm thinking, like, no, I want, like, a friend or family member holding my kid watching me finish. I don't want to, like, run with this kid behind me for 26 and however many miles.
We're going to get such hate mail from these parents who, like, love running with their kids. And they're like, you guys don't know what you're talking about.
listen, all the power to you from both running and having kids. I can totally understand how they both fit together. For me, it's much less congruent. I just don't understand. Like, to me, running is such an independent activity. I wouldn't really feel the need to have my child with me at all times while I do it. I could totally understand if it's like while you're walking around, but from the way Will was skewing it, and specifically, you know, bringing in a champion runner, he seemed to market this in a way of, oh yeah, bring these kids on your big races by having them dragged behind you.
Right. And there's definitely people who do that. And, like, honestly, that's so awesome that they're able to do that. But it's such a small subset of people. A, it's like, okay, parents. And then B, it's parents who do long distance running. And then C, it's parents who do long distance running who want their kid behind them. I feel like that's such a tiny market right there.
Extremely. And we know we talked last week with the hand boards about how that might have been an extremely tiny market, with them marketing only to adult surfers rather than trying to market to kids as sort of a surfer starting kit. And I feel like it's a very same story here. Extremely niche market, as you just said, of these are adult runners who are so dedicated that they want to bring their kids with them. I feel that's extremely small. So it's a combination of that and the fact that Will here is just an extreme perfectionist to the point of where, you know, he's been doing this for what, like 5 years at this point, and he still hasn't released any sort of prototype as of yet.
Right. So, you know, he says at the top of the pitch, this is a go-to-market investment opportunity. And he's got that sales talk down so well in this entire pitch. And I'm just like, warning bells, warning bells. And at a certain point, they're like, wait, you haven't been to market with this yet? And then he repeats the same line, like, this is a go-to-market investment opportunity.
Yeah, that's probably a big warning sign that they started to see through his words. And he slowly is just dragging himself deeper and deeper down. I mean, I don't know why he had to drop the fact of, hey, I did a Kickstarter for $100,000. And then they keep needling him saying, like, how much did you end up making? How much did you end up making? He says, yeah, I only made like $6,000 or $7,000, which is pretty pathetic.
Right. It was interesting to see the way he tried to avoid answering that question. And then finally had to admit he only raised $6,000 to $7,000. I mean, you can see why, because apparently the Kickstarter was for him to build these ambassador teams to test out the product. And I can understand, like, why would I, as a Kickstarter person looking to give money, like, I don't want to sponsor other people to use the product. Like, I want the product.
Yeah. So explain to me a little bit about this ambassador program. Is it essentially like you're also kind of sponsoring a runner and you're buying the product as well? Is that what that meant?
I honestly don't know. It just got lost in sort of the wave of all these buzzy words that he was using. Like, at some point he said, like, this is a technically designed exclusive product for the radically complex. Like, did you remember that part? It was like he had such polished speak down that didn't really have any meaning behind it, like the market investment opportunity. This is a radically complex product. And the whole ambassador program was just another one of those things that I don't think like I truly got what it was. And, you know, it was another thing added to his presentation that didn't give confidence to the sharks. They're like, what are you doing? Like, why aren't you aggressively just getting this out there?
No, he's the music man, essentially. He's coming in and he's shilling a product that, I mean, he's Harold Will, if you will. It's all surface level. I think once you actually dig deep down, he says, oh yeah, actually, this stuff isn't so successful. And I mean, I can understand, I think on paper, he's doing some good stuff. I mean, I like that he used parents for research and development to really help test the product, but I don't know. I'm also trying to figure out whether I agree or disagree with the shark's idea that you're too much of a perfectionist. Why is this not out on the market yet? Because I can totally understand for any other product, but if it's a child safety product, and granted it's child safety granted towards running, not just your regular everyday safety product, but when you do that, you want to make sure it's 100% safe, because otherwise you're going to get lawsuits and you're going to get a lot of negative press.
Yeah, I wasn't quite following their sort of adamant attitude of like, perfection is the enemy of profitability, I think one of the sharks said. I think the issue here is that A, it's an extremely small market, and B, and I think Robert was the one who brought this up, like parents like seeing their kids. And I think that's why the parents who do this, who do go jogging with their kids, they're keeping the kid in front of them. So I think those are the two main issues, not necessarily that he was, you know, a perfectionist that was preventing this product from getting out into the market fast enough.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think, you know, Will's solution to that was also pretty bare bones of like, no, you can just look behind you. But like, then you're clearly not looking ahead of you. And if you trip and fall, I can only imagine what's going to happen to that kid runner as well. So
that's
why
the kid has to wear the helmet.
I guess so, in case of a crash. So, yeah, I just feel like overall, I think the sharks might have been in on it to begin with. But I mean, they're bowing out, they're all kind of saying like, hey, start taking orders, bite the bullet, essentially. So again, I don't know if I agree with that, considering that children's lives might be at risk. But Kevin actually brings up an interesting point. And again, he comes from the realm of children's entertainment, so he probably is the most knowledgeable about this. But he says that, you know, there's never been a children's product before that's really a one size fits all. You know, as many toys that say for all ages, that might not necessarily be true in terms of marketability. And he still feels like this product is no different, which I guess I would agree with, because I feel like it happens with strollers as well, or trams, right? When a child goes to a certain size, it can't really fit inside that kid runner anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and like I said, they, you know, the problem that I guess they really had with this is that he's taking so long. Like, I think he even like launched a pre-order site, but then he didn't even ask for deposits yet. So just like
it's just 1200 people that said like, I'm interested, which is the equivalent of like having a Facebook event and having like 100 people for a party say like, yeah, I'm interested. Like, you can't count on those as concrete numbers when the actual party arrives.
I mean, like at the end of the day, like I'm not ruling out the product. I think he seems like he's a very smart man. Like, he's been like thoughtfully, you know, putting together the research for this product. But at this very moment in time, as he's appearing on Shark Tank, like 100% agree, like don't give him an investment. Like, I wouldn't feel comfortable giving him an investment. So I agree with the sharks, but I'm not ruling out the product. I think if he's able to get it out to market, I think there's something there.
Well, spoiler alert, Jasmine, I'm looking at the Kid Runner site and guess what? It is not out to market.
Oh, yet, no.
So I don't know how long ago this was filmed, but who knows? I'm still asked to sign up to pre-order one at 20% off the $750 MSRP.
Is he at least asking you for a deposit now?
Nope. It just is giving me first name, last name, and then an email, and then says sign me up.
You know what? I'm going to sign up for this, and then I'll let you know if I ever get an email.
Are we doing our own version then on the podcast of Where Are They Now to see if these things actually go through?
What you have to do. I'm gonna sign up for this email list right now.
I like it. It's shark countability.
All right. You want to go to the last pitch of the night?
Yeah. So while you're signing up for Kid Runner's newsletter, I'm going to talk a little bit about Inchbug. Again, speaking along the kid friendly nature of tonight's show. This is a woman by the name of Brenda Lee Feldman. So first of all, she sort of has her own little thriving children's products company that she sort of started from her garage. The product that she's specifically pimping out at first is something called My Drinky, which, as she's shown through video, mitigates the problem of kids wanting to squeeze the living daylights out of juice boxes and have juice flow everywhere. It's essentially a plastic casing that goes around the juice box that will protect your rugs and or clothes from getting stained. Though the conversation turns very interestingly about halfway through to her overall product and her first big success story, which is something called Orbit, which from what I understand is like a personalized rubber band that goes around a bottle that essentially has the kid's name on it.
And who knew that, like, I think she said she's been doing this, doing that specific product for 10 years and had $15 million in sales. Is that correct?
Which is, again, insane of someone who, again, it has not gone retail at all. It's only been online and basically through word of mouth. I mean, that's pretty crazy.
Right. So, you know, just to clarify, because the sharks were a little bit confused about that. The investment that she's asking for is a portion of the business. So it would include the My Drinky, and it would also include this baby bottle label maker. So she's asking for $400,000 for 10% of the company, making, you know, the overall valuation of $4 million. And that's where we find out that the bottle labelers brought in $50 million in the last 10 years, but she's only sold $50,000 worth of the My Drinky product.
So let's talk about My Drinky at first. Are you buying in on this? Do you remember being a kid that would squeeze the life out of these juice boxes?
I mean, it happens. Like, it is something that happens when you drink out of something like this. Was it such a huge problem that I needed to place it into another container to prevent it from happening? Or did my mom see it as such a huge problem that she would theoretically need this? I don't think so. I mean, one of the sharks brought up the fact that the big appeal of those juice boxes is just, you know, you grab one, you throw it in the lunchbox, you throw it in the car when you're going on a trip. You don't want to have to think about, okay, I got a juice box now. Now I got to get this, you know, external plastic container that I'm going to have to wash every now and then. If you are using plastic containers, you might as well just use water bottles or any sort of bottles to keep juices in. I don't like the idea of like carrying those two at the same time. So that was sort of my disconnect with this product.
Yeah, and I would say, like, if you have a problem with squeezing the juice out, why not just, like, pour the juice into, like, a sippy cup, you know?
Right.
Like, I feel like this isn't a problem. And again, not a parent here, so I might be preaching to no choir.
I think that was abundantly clear from our discussion with the last pitch of how
yes,
I didn't
exactly
know what it was called, a pram or a trolley.
when I adamantly said I do not have kids, that hopefully this is just a test for people who might have been paying attention to the podcast, listening comprehension. But I again, from an objective point of view, I can't understand why this would be such a big problem that it needs to be solved. So I can understand why she's only sold a certain amount so far. What did you think overall about this massively successful Orbit product?
I mean, I'm surprised. Like, I didn't think a product like that would be super successful. So she obviously knows what she's doing. I think Kevin at some point says, you know, you're the real deal, but he's correct. Like, these labelers are where the action is. And she's just kind of using the success of that product to really prop up this new thing that she wants to do because of boredom or something. I know some of the sharks were like, why don't you just stick with this business? You know, you have a recurring revenue of $2 million a year from this one product and you're living the dream. Like, you don't have to chase the grass. It's always greener on the other side. So I thought that was like an interesting aspect of the conversation.
Yeah, speaking towards the Orbit labels, I mean, I can understand they have more of a usefulness than the My Drinky, just because I can imagine, you know, if you're, I don't know, in a daycare, for instance, or if you're in a house with multiple babies and you want to make sure you've designated which bottles are which or which juices are which without having to take the masking tape and write something down on it. I could totally understand this. I thought at first they were blank labels that you would write on, but it turns out that they're more so like personalized labels that you'll just write someone's name in there. It seems like, I'm looking at their website right now, they actually have a lot of products that are tailored towards like customizability and labels. There's like clothing labels that they sell that have like, you know, you can put the kid's name on it. You can put their name and their address and their phone number on there as well. So it seems like Inchbug, outside of My Drinky, is really marketing towards identification of your children.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I like I said, I just don't think this is something people are going to be clamoring for. At the same time, though, I wouldn't have said a bottle labeler was something people were going to be clamoring for, because I'm thinking in my head, like, why don't you just grab some masking tape and a Sharpie and just get the job done that way? But clearly, I apparently don't know enough about parental products to be making that call.
Exactly. I guess when you're exhausted at 3 a.m., I think the last thing you want to do is find a Sharpie and a piece of masking tape and do it. I want to talk about this retail question, because this seems to be the most interesting part of this segment. And this leads to, for the first time, at least when we've been podcasting, the first time we've seen someone refuse the deal and walk away without anything, purposely empty-handed, where Bart and Brenda is absolutely adamant about saying, I want to bring these products to retail to expand my business. And all the sharks seem universally against it because they think, like, hey, when you get involved in retail, you have to jump through a buttload of hoops. You've been able to make a buttload of money without jumping through those buttload of hoops. Why are you causing yourself the trouble?
Right. And, you know, I can see where they're coming from, because her Blockbuster product is not something that works in retail. It's all about the customization of the labeler. And then she has a second product that hasn't really proven itself. It's only sold $50,000. I know she talked about some issues with her production plants, like one of the production plants burnt down. But, you know, even given that, like, I can see why they're really hesitant. Like, she's shown that she could be super successful, $15 million, super successful selling stuff online. Why is she rushing to go into retail? I think some of the sharks also have, like, PTSD of, like, trying to get previous Shark Tank products through retail. So I can see maybe a little bit of where they're coming from. But, you know, she doesn't want to 100% close off that option. And one of the offers that she gets from Kevin would 100% close off that retail option. So he makes an offer. You know, he likes to add a lot of bells and whistles to his deal. So it's a little bit of a royalty deal where he wants $1 back per every product that she sells until he gets back three times the $400,000. And then on top of that, he wants to keep 5%. And
this is like a Rumpelstiltskin deal, yeah, essentially.
Barbara was like, you know, this is a greedy deal. Like, she just lays it out. I'm like, I love you, Barbara. But, like, that's a ridiculous offer.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically, and we talked a little bit last week about whether with certain cases, are sharks just sort of like throwing out pity deals to sort of just get the good TV juices flowing. I could definitely feel Kevin was doing this a little bit. I don't think his heart was really into this product, especially when she was so adamant about going into retail. But he thought, you know, let me get a good moment out of this. And so he proposes this absolutely ridiculous deal, which, again, on top of her insisting that she has to go retail, makes her refuse the deal and walk away.
Right. So, yeah, like you said, we're presented with this interesting situation where a deal was, or an offer was given, but she walks away from it. And I 100% agree that was the best call for a couple of reasons. One, this, you know, offer was ridiculous. Like, he's guaranteeing himself three times a profit on the investment right up front and taking away, you know, bleeding away revenue by taking a dollar from the royalty. And she still has to give up 5% of the company and close off all doors to retail, which is something she wants to explore. So 100% agree that that was the right decision for her to turn it down. I'm not sure that she should go to retail or not yet. That's something I'm still, I'm still unsure whether that's the right move or not. But to close off that option completely, I think was really smart of her not to agree to that right away.
Yeah, I mean, if I could buy an Orbit label and write bad decision on it and put it on any of her products, I would. I don't understand. Maybe it was because of the Shark Tank bump. I don't understand why she came on the show in the first place. I don't think she actually thought any of these people would want to go for retail again, especially because she's made so much money and has been so successful on her own without having to deal with the headache that is dealing with all these retail stores. I think purely she went in to just say, like, hey, I want to get more exposure. And even on her website, she's advertising both My Drinky and Orbit labels have appeared on Shark Tank. So I feel like she's going to get a bump no matter what. But I think she kind of went in knowing, hey, there's a good chance I'm going to walk away empty handed.
I think it definitely probably crossed her mind. I don't get the feeling that she was just doing this for the appearance. Like, I feel like I can usually tell when people are just kind of in there because they just want to be on TV. And I do know, like, the producers really work hard to weed those people out. I have a feeling she was looking for some sort of deal. Maybe she was hoping, like, you know, Lori will jump on and they get on the QVC train or something like that. So I think she was looking for something. I think it's good that she didn't get a deal out of this situation because she wasn't going to get the deal that she wanted. She wanted to explore retail. And she still got the Shark Tank exposure. So I think all in all, like, a good situation from her coming out of this episode.
So let's give our power rankings, our individual rankings for our four products that happened this episode. So we have the Drip Drop, we have Jared and Raja, we have Kid Runner, and we have Inch Bug. So Jasmine, in your opinion, what products rank best to worst for you?
Right. So interestingly, we only got one deal tonight, which was the Drip Drop with Barbara for $50,000 for 33%. But that's actually not the one I'm going to rank the highest. So how I'm kind of looking at it, I know how I'm looking at it is, like, you know, 5 years from now, which of these four products or companies is going to be the most successful? And I would put number one as My Drinky, actually.
Oh, interesting.
I really liked her. I think she was really smart. And I, even though I'm like, oh, you know, do people really want, you know, to use their juice box in the whatever product or whatever? I'm going based on the fact that this wasn't the only product she had. I'm going based on the fact that this seems to be a great company. She seems to be a smart woman who's coming up with inventions. Yeah, there were little, you know, bumps in the road with the initial product and with the second product. But I have a lot of confidence in the company and the product. Even though she didn't get a deal coming out of it, I feel like she'll whip something up. The exposure on Shark Tank is going to be great for people who just want to click around and buy things online, especially if this is still 100% online business. So I would put that as my number one.
Okay, I would actually do the same thing because I think, well, you know, Lori says if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think it's a good point to bring up, especially specifically the first part of that clause, that what she did is essentially isn't broken. She was able to create basically an empire of baby products out of her own backyard, which I think is fantastic and shows her business acumen. I think, again, I think we could debate whether or not her coming on the show was more so a marketing ploy than anything. But the fact is, she's proven she's successful in the past. I think she took a gamble by coming on with a new product, with a new plan, and essentially lost out on it. But the fact is, she still has a successful business to walk home to. And my personal number two, it's probably the least of three evils at this point, but I'd probably go with Drip Drop. I think, it getting a deal is nice. I think while it might not be the most universally viable thing in the world, I think that the two guys had a good pitch. I think, you know, I think it might possibly become a thing, probably not as big of a thing as they want to, but it doesn't seem like as outright a badly executed product as the other two.
Right. So, I mean, I was considering Drip Drop as my second. I decided to make it third because I just see this as just like their high school hobby project. They're going to do this for a few years in high school. Maybe they'll make a couple thousand, $10,000, you know, $100,000. But I don't really see this going anywhere after they mature and they decide what their real company is going to be as entrepreneurs. So I put that at number three. So for my number two, I put Kid Runner. So I'm going to wait on my email for when this product actually comes out to market. Yeah. So the reason why I put it at number two is I'm like, he seemed like a real thoughtful guy. Hopefully this will come out on the market sometime. I'm like really banking on that aspect. I know that's a big risk. But the third aspect was, you know, this thing retails for $750. It's, if you can sell, even if he doesn't sell a lot, if you can even sell a little, that's some money there.
That's definitely some money, but I don't know if it compares to the amount of time that he spent building this product. I think what puts Drip Drop above Kid Runner for me is that, again, while they both might be pretty niche markets, I feel like Drip Drop has an overall larger swath of people that it can appeal to, because we talked about how Kid Runner specifically appeals to not just parents, but the parents that run, and not just the parents that run, but the parents that are so dedicated to running that they need to have their children with them while they run. So, I mean, we'll definitely see how many they end up selling if they ever end up actually releasing the product. At least we can both agree on the bookends that Jared and Raja are number four, scraping the bottom here of our power rankings.
Right, and like the only reason I do put them in number four, like I don't, it's just so risky with entertainment productions, like we talked about it, like it's hit or miss. Like they could be the most successful next Siegfried and Roy, as they say they want to be, or we could just never hear from them in 1 month ever again.
Yeah, exactly. And again, what I saw on them, and I haven't watched their America's Got Talent or their myriad of other network appearances, but what they did in that pitch did not appeal to me. It did not excite me. It didn't make me say, okay, this is something different, as a, you know, if something like Penn and Teller, which combines music, which combines magic with comedy. I feel like combining magic with music isn't that big of a trademark. So, I mean, I wish them all the best of luck. Hopefully they took Barbara's or Lori's advice and went up to Chicago, brought some coats with them, but who knows what they're doing now.
Right. So that was our podcast. I thought it was a good episode. It's kind of sad we only got one deal out of it. It's definitely more exciting when there's more deals. But I think the three that were rejected were all rejected for good reason.
Definitely. Jasmine, do you want to talk a little bit about, we're back in 2 weeks on the show with Chris Saga, I believe his name is, as a guest shark?
Yeah. So Chris Saga, he's a well-known Silicon Valley investor. He was previously, I guess, earlier on the season. I do believe this was the episode we're going to see next week was the same one or from the same filming session that they showed earlier in the season, because he's wearing that same sort of T-shirt. I don't even know what to describe that. yeah, he was previously a guest shark. And out here, at least in Silicon Valley, he's quite infamous. He is a high profile investor in a lot of really big products, or not products, companies, in Twitter and Uber, and he used to work at Google. So he's definitely a well-known tech investor. So I'm interested to see what he brings to the table next week. They kind of build it as a billionaire versus billionaire showdown, mm-hmm. which is going to be pretty interesting to see.
Yeah, Battle of the Billionaires, which, you know, outside of Ashton, I'm really, because I haven't seen any of these guest sharks this season. I'm never sure, like, okay, how much good TV are these guys doing? Because Ashton did definitely impress us last week, but it seems like, if only to face down with Mark for 42 minutes, I feel like he's definitely be worth it.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if he was involved with the deal the last time he was on air. Like I said, I'm sure he was, because I think whenever they have a guest shark, they always try to get one solid deal in them that guest shark made. But I'm going to have to look up what he did last time around, maybe in preparation for next week.
So, yeah, Chris Sacca will be going onto the Shark Tank in 2 weeks, but he will not be coming on next week. I believe next week the show is off, but we have a little bit of a surprise podcast that will be coming out next week. You will not be deprived of Shark Tank coverage. When Jasmine and I started podcasting about Shark Tank, obviously we both talked about how there are some holes here and there. I mean, there's a bunch of episodes in the air continuously on CNBC. So we're bound to catch a bunch of episodes, but we're also bound to miss a bunch of episodes. But we thought this off week would be a great opportunity to talk about the pitches of yore, the best of or the most crazy and outrageous products and pitches. So what Jasmine and I are going to do is next week, we're going to pick a good handful of notable pitches and or products to talk about. We're going to review them, much like we reviewed the pitches from this episode, and really break them down. And we could probably talk a little bit more about their success and see where they went from there. And at the same time, I know you guys have talked a little bit about us checking out Beyond the Tank, which neither Jasmine and I have seen. I know we've each watched a couple of episodes, and we thought this would be the perfect time to kind of talk a little bit about our thoughts on the show overall and whether we want to add it to our overall podcast coverage.
Yeah, so because of the off week and scheduling, we just thought it would be a great idea. There have been some really good pitches that have been in the past, so, you know, we'd love to hear suggestions. It could be a mix of some really outstanding pitches or really outstanding products that have come out of Shark Tank, so we'll try to do a little bit of both.
Definitely. So you have a bunch of ways to reach out to us with that, and any sort of feedback you have about this episode and the podcast as well. If you're listening to this on robhasawebsite.com, be sure to leave us a comment there. We take very care to watch them. But while you're there, subscribe to the Reality TV Wrap Ups only feed. That way you'll get the fantastic Reality TV Happy Hour. I know the challenge is coming back, so there's a lot of good stuff going on there. If you're part of the Rob Has a Podcast patron group, there'll be a thread most likely going on in one of the groups that you can respond to as well. And as always, you can reach out to us on Twitter. I am at @AMikeBloomType. Jasmeet, how can people find you?
You can reach me on Twitter as well at Jasmeet Sidhu. It's my full name together, JASMEETSIDHU. And I just signed up for the Kid Runner newsletter, so I'll keep you guys posted.
Keep us on track with that Kid Runner progress. And Jasmine, thank you for coming on as always. Great job. Always love talking about Shark Tank with you. Super pumped to dive back into the past next week as well. We have 6 seasons and change to expound upon with Shark Tank, so I'm excited to take a first glance at that.
Right, thanks for having me again this week.
Of course. What do you think about the hashtag Shark Countability in
shark
honor of your
Countability? How would I spell that? Shark.
I guess we SHARK OUNTABILITY.
Okay, so I was still putting the C in it. So replace the C with the. I got you. Okay.
Yeah, that's two characters
that to understand it.
It's two characters that people can use for whatever they desire now. So hashtag Shark Countability in honor of Jasmeet's devotion to signing up for the Kid
I'm
Runner newsletter.
On these guys, and I'll let you know if that thing ever comes out.
And maybe we'll make it a thing. Maybe I'll sign up for Drip Drops newsletter, and we'll start to really keep progress on these startups. But for now, we're going to keep that open-ended, as this is the end of the Shark Tank podcast. Again, thank you guys so much for listening. We'll be back next week talking about some pitches of yore, as well as Beyond the Tank. So please let us know about any pitches and products that you want us to talk about. Otherwise, the tank is closed.